This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A group of Virginia and West Virginia landowners along the path of the Mountain Valley Pipeline will have a day in court this week in their eminent domain lawsuit against the project. Brittany Patterson has more.
A hearing is scheduled today before the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. The landowners sued developers of the 300-mile-long project and the federal regulators who approved it. The lawsuit argues that the taking of their property through eminent domain is an unconstitutional land grab. The landowners have asked the appeals court to reverse the decision of a lower court judge, who didn't rule on the constitutional issues in the case but dismissed them, saying she lacked subject matter jurisdiction. The pipeline company wants the appeals court to uphold the lower court's ruling. As proposed, the Mountain Valley Pipeline will carry natural gas from Wetzel County and northwestern West Virginia to southern Virginia. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson in Morgantown.
West Virginia's arts culture just got a boost through a federal grant. Liz McCormick has more.
The National Endowment for the Arts, or NEA, awarded West Virginia nearly $800,000 this week to support programs that aim to preserve the state's cultural history and promote arts education. According to a release from the NEA, the funds are meant to help provide access to the arts for people across the country and support programs that provide jobs to artists, administrators, and other creative workers. The majority of West Virginia's award will be given to the West Virginia Division of Culture and History through a grant of more than $650,000. The Heritage Farm Foundation, which works to preserve and develop Old Central City in Huntington, will see $75,000 of the grant. Other groups that will see some of the funds include the West Virginia Humanities Council, the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra, and Allegheny Echoes, an organization based out of Marlinton that helps support summer workshops that focus on Appalachian arts and music. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
J.D. Vance, author of the best-selling memoir Hillbilly Elegy, returns to his native Kentucky this week. But Vance isn't selling books. He's leading a bus tour of well-heeled venture capitalists looking for investment options in the region. As Jeff Young reports, Vance's tour is attracting hopeful companies and some harsh critics.
Vance worked with AOL founder Steve Case to line up big-name investors for what they call the rise of the rest. So who are the rest? Well, Vance says it's anyone outside the Silicon Valley, Boston, and New York tech centers, the places that take up about three-quarters of venture capital investment.
And so to us, the rest is pretty much everybody that's struggling over that really small pot of money. If only three states are getting most of the venture capital, that means only three states are getting most of the net job growth.
The tour's real purpose is to raise visibility for entrepreneurs in places that the economic recovery has largely left behind.
And we don't think that Rise of the Rest is going to solve the economic development problem for the entire region. We just think, and we have a lot of confidence, that it will help.
Since Vance's memoir about his dysfunctional family hit the bestseller list, he's become a go-to explainer for all things Appalachian. But Vance is also attracting critics who say he blames the poor for their own predicament. When Vance spoke at a recent Appalachian Studies conference, some audience members turned their backs in protest. Vance is taking the criticism in stride.
I definitely think people are justifiably a little bit weary of having one guy serve as a representative of the region.
Others have concerns about whether the venture capital Vance now promotes is the right fit for the region.
This is a place where investors have shown up time and time again, and they left behind a mess.
That's Dee Davis, founder of the Center for Rural Strategies in Whitesburg, Kentucky. Davis compares venture capitalists, with the high rate of return they often seek, to the extractive industries that damaged so much of his region.
We'd love to have some thoughtful investment, some patient investment, some people who can understand what's really valuable here.
One early investment by Vance's Rise of the Rest Fund could speak to some of those concerns. The company App Harvest aims to build large hydroponic greenhouses on abandoned mine land in eastern Kentucky. App Harvest founder Jonathan Webb spoke to partner station WMMT.
Now is the time to reimagine, reinvest, and rebuild here. What are we going to do now?
App Harvest has lofty goals to put damaged lands to new use, but it has hit a snag. The uneven settlement of the disturbed mine site could make some of it unsuitable for construction. Another example of how hard it could be for new investment to gain a solid footing in Appalachia's hills. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Jeff Young.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Mostly cloudy skies today in the north, partly cloudy in the south. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms statewide today with highs in the 70s. Scattered rain and thunderstorms overnight with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness, a chance of rain and thunderstorms with highs in the 70s and low 80s. And on Saturday, partly sunny skies, a chance of rain and thunderstorms with high temperatures in the 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Pregnancy-related and postpartum depression and anxiety are common, affecting anywhere from 10 to 20% of all mothers. As we head towards Mother's Day, Carol Lofton talks with several women about their experience with maternal mental health.
Okay. Micaiah, take your showing off level and turn it down to a one.
Jennifer Petrosky is a therapist and also has two young children. I caught up with her the week before she and her husband were set to move to Ohio.
I have struggled with anxiety and depression for as long as I can remember, even as a child. I struggled with that sort of thing. And what I have learned about maternal mental health, being a therapist and just being a mom, is that it is not discussed until after the baby is born.
Even then, she says, her doctor just asked her point blank if she was suicidal. She wasn't, and left it at that. She was able to cope until she got pregnant again.
When I got pregnant with my daughter, my dad had passed away about 2 months before that. We had had a miscarriage. My husband had chronic fatigue and couldn't get out of bed most of the winter. I know stress played a big role, but every day I just cried in the shower, because I was so anxious and so depressed, and I just was like, there's no village around me to help.
Michelle Comer is the West Virginia Support Coordinator for Postpartum Support International and a therapist specializing in maternal mental health.
The way that we live, the way that our society, the trends in our current society definitely compound or magnify the experience of postpartum depression. It isn't new. It's been around as long as moms have been having babies.
Comer says that one of the biggest things that can help moms who are feeling anxious, depressed, and alone is to connect with others who are in the same boat.
We were never intended to parent in isolation.
And yet, many women find themselves asked to be supermom, to be everything for everyone, and to do it by themselves.
And a lot of people say, oh, well, I live around a lot of people, or, oh, I go to church, and they're really nice, but that's not people living with you.
Danielle Burgum has a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. But when she got pregnant the first time, it wasn't planned and she didn't want to be pregnant. The rolling emotions led to severe prenatal depression and a lingering sense of isolation.
Historical tribal culture, the only thing that they were doing was survival. They had help just with basic survival needs. And we are expected to not only do our basic survival stuff on our own, we're expected to do everything we put on top of that on our own just to function in this culture that we've created. So part of it is this perspective that we have on what being successful is and what you're supposed to do as a mom, as a dad.
Burgum ended up becoming a doula and a birth educator. She focused on her nutrition and completely shifted her lifestyle so that she felt balanced again, which for her meant finding a job she could do from home and homeschooling her kids. It was a long process. For others, like Sarah Doonesbury, though, feeling normal again may involve medication.
After I had my second child 5 years later, it was just like the same thing repeated itself. That's when I kind of realized that, something was wrong, but I was too ashamed because it's not talked about.
enough.
Dusenberry didn't get help until after the birth of her third child, despite the fact that feelings of anxiety and depression lingered for months, then years after each birth. Now that she's on medication for her anxiety and depression, she says she feels like a whole new person. For all three women, and probably many of the moms in your life, the biggest theme is the need for support and the desire for a return to some kind of village where the burden and joys of raising children can be shared. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. On this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, we hear from several young students in Appalachia, North Carolina, about what it's like to live in the mountains. These pieces were crafted during a summer program of the Partnership for Appalachian Girls Education for girls in grades 6 through 9. The youth in the program worked with facilitators to write, edit, and voice digital stories that say something about their lives. Here's a story from Wren Treadway about her family's tradition of cooking donuts.
They're really good. First, there's the yeast. It's the active ingredient. Then we scald the milk so it doesn't kill the yeast. We add other ingredients, but I can't tell you the amounts because they're secret. Our family secret. But really, it's me and my mom that make them. My brothers just care about eating the donuts. Sometimes mom adds chocolate. Once she made pina colada ones with a pineapple cream cheese filling. I can tell you this. We use a plastic cup, not a rolling pin. Then we use it to make the rounds and a medicine bottle to cut the center holes. There are two jobs, frying and glazing. Either I'm glazing or eating. And when I'm eating, my brother glazes while mom fries. If the donuts sink before they float up, it means the yeast hasn't risen enough. And when they float to the top right away, they're gonna be airy and delicious. We glaze them right out of the fryer while they're warm and put them on a plate. When it's sunny, Jared, Joshua, Jedi, Wynn, and I sit out on the porch and eat them. At the end, there's a plate covered in glaze, and I get to lick it. My mom is cooking magic, and I want to be just like her. She used to work at Joe's Donuts, but his recipe was secret, too. Mom tried different things until she got her own donuts perfect. And she kept her recipe in my brother's phone until it broke. Mom and I each remembered it differently. We tried a half cup less flour, a little more yeast, maybe a little more vanilla, like that, until we got it. That's when we wrote our recipe on 5 or 6 index cards. But each one had a couple of wrong ingredient amounts, on purpose. Then we hid them around the house. I can't tell you where they're hidden either. Even if someone finds one, they'll never get it right. I can make the dough, but I'm still working on the frying part. I want to make them by myself one day, and maybe pass the recipe on to my kids. With my mom's permission, of course.
That was Wren Treadway, a seventh grader from Madison County who lives in the mountains of North Carolina. She produced that story last year with the help from PAGE, Partnership for Appalachian Girls Education, a program affiliated with Duke University. Her piece originally aired on WUNC in Chapel Hill. We'll hear more of the series tomorrow, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.